alcoholic. My name's Susan Twining. And you know, some of you were here last week. Yes, I got the computer fixed. I had that fixed on Friday. And the dryer got fixed on Sunday. You'll all be happy to know that. This week, it was me that got broke. So I will talk as long as my voice holds out. How's that? Step three. This is one of my favorite building steps. We started building on that conscious contact with God with step two. Step three is that second building block on that connection to God. We make our decision to turn our will and over to the care of God. Now, we started having a beginning with that mustard seed. And I'm going to tell you what, that seed hasn't grown very big when you get to step three. And I watch people all the time, and I know I did. I struggled with that idea of, I still don't understand this God. And I struggled with the idea of turning my will and my life over to the care of. And this is how my sponsor explained it to me. Can you make a decision to that group of drunks that are going to give you good orderly direction to do what they did to make them hope and joy in their lives? Can you turn your will over to them? And I said, I can do that. She says, then do that. That was my first third step. No more, no less. That's exactly what I did. I turned my will and my life over to that group of drunks. Not a group, not a person, not my sponsor. It was a group of people. It was a meeting. It was a home group. It was a home group conscience. It was an entire group of people. Not that whole group was going to fall out. One might go out and get drunk, but not everybody. And I lived off of that to work myself through the rest of the steps. That was my first third step. It seems really, really simple. And you know what? It should be. We should quit overcomplicating things. I take my girls through the first three steps usually in about a week. Okay? And I'm not rushing them. What I'm trying to do is get them moving on the program of recovery to get them far enough so that they can get far enough away from the drink so that they will stay sober. So that we can get to four and five so they can dump garbage so that they have a chance of living this world and have some joy and happiness in their lives. So no, I don't rush my girls through the steps. If they're stuck, if they're really stuck, we stay back. But step three, people are overcomplicating it. I just can't turn my will and my life over to this God that I don't understand. Well, bring it down to something simple. Give it something good. Do what my sponsor did for me. Make it understandable, that group of drunks. Those people who have joy and happiness in their lives, is that what you want? Yes, that's what I want. Make it simple. Okay, so I'll get off my little stool here now. What I have my girls do for step three is they read pages 60 to 63 and the third step in 12 and 12. Pretty simple. If they get confused, they call me. I have many, many resources. There's a list over there of books that I use that I can go to any. I have them highlighted in different colors for different steps. And I will answer all their questions. I tell them the only stupid question you're ever going to ask me is the one that you don't ask me. That is the only stupid question. And you can call me back and ask me the same question 20 times. I don't care. I would rather you ask me than to sit there and feel like stupid because you don't understand. The directions are step three. Or right on page 63, it's the third step prayer. And if you don't know it, you should. I say it every day of my life. I say it when I start to meditate every day. It's what I use for my meditation. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Amen. I say that every day when I start my meditation. I end my meditation with the seven-step prayer. I use those two prayers because they mean the most to me. They really do. I have other prayers I say throughout the day. A lot of them that are nonsensical. I will share a little bit of a story before I quit today, that story that I was telling you at the very beginning about the third step and the second leg of our journey to find God consciousness. the first leg being step two. I heard that at a women's retreat when I was in Princeton, New Jersey in 1979 with my mother. And I only know that because when I was doing up my notes in the computer, I was taking stuff out of old folders from retreats and workshops that I've been to over the years. And it was on one of these papers from a women's retreat at Princeton, New Jersey in August of 1979. My mother and I went to it together. And that was one of the workshops that I went to, was about the first, second, and third steps. And that was written on there. So the next thing I tell my girls is that being willing is the key. They don't have to be all in. They just have to be willing. Willing to try. Willing to rely on someone other than themselves. Be willing. Open, honest, and willing. And I tell them how means honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And who is willingness, open-mindedness, who is willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness. Okay, I switch it around for them just so they get the picture. That that's all we're asking from them is honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. Be honest with yourself. Because trust me, I'm going to know within 5 minutes whether you're lying to me. They all have tricks. Open-minded, you got to be willing to listen to what I've got to say and be willing to try it. Okay? A vague understanding of the God's will for us is to follow the group of drunks who have knowledge of staying sober one day at a time and will give us good orderly direction, a decision to work the rest of the steps. That is what my first sponsor told me. I already went over that. How do we understand God? A lot of people ask me that question. How do I know if it's God? How do I understand God? How do I get God in my life? And I basically what I tell them is what was told to me by my first sponsors. We work the steps. We listen to our sponsors. We go to meetings. We be open-minded. We be willing to do the next right thing. And then the next question they ask me is, how do I know what is the next right thing? I said, if I'm conniving to make it happen, it's not the next right thing. If I'm being open and honest about what I'm going to do, it's probably the next right thing. If things fall into place, that, you know, the ride happens, everything happens, the money's there, everything, I know I'm supposed to be at that retreat. If the money isn't there, if the ride doesn't happen, if everything falls through, I'm not supposed to be there. It wasn't where I was meant to be. The story to go along with that one is, when I was buying my house, a friend of mine they were out shopping for a house, and I knew I was about a year away from buying mine, but at that time I had lost the feeling in my legs and I couldn't drive anymore. She used to call me up and say, want to get out of the house? And I'd say, yes. And she and I would go driving around, and we would look at places, and we'd drive past, she had the ad from the Sunday paper, the open homes thing, and she went by this one house, and she says, oh my God, that's so too small for us. And I went, oh my God, that house would be perfect for me. That very next day, the house went off the market. I thought, oh my God, they sold it. And it was like, oh well, I'm not even ready to buy yet. What am I worried about? Just about a year later, my lawyer calls me, and I had some lawsuits from the injury to my back. And he says, you're going to be getting your money, and you're on Social Security. You have to get rid of that money fast. I said, well, I told you what I'm doing with it. I'm buying a house. He says, well, get out there and look for your house, because if you're going to have this money, you've got to get rid of it fast. I opened up that Sunday paper, and in that open house thing, that house was listed. It went back in that week. That weekend, my girlfriend and I went up to that house. We went to three other houses before that one, and they all just didn't feel right. We walked into that one, and I had never been inside of it, but it felt right. When I walked in that house, it felt right. It felt like my home. They wanted more for it than I was getting. They accepted my bid for what I was getting. Everything fell into place. I got the money, and 3 days later, we went to closing. It all fell into place. That's God working in my life. My belief. So I knew I was doing the next right thing. I still live in that little house today, and I love it. And people love to come to my house. They said, when you walk in here, it just feels like you're just, it surrounds you. You can sit out by my back, by the back of my house and watch the sun go down over the lake, or you can sit at the front of my house and watch the sun come up over the ridge of 90 there. It's nice. I mean, it's just a perfect place. And you don't hear the traffic from 90, and you don't hear the traffic from Station Road. It's very peaceful and quiet, and my neighbors are awesome. It's a wonderful place to live. So, I'm a big one on the promises, as we said before. And there are 10 promises associated with step 4. These are my two favorites. We ask him to remove and direct our attention to what he would have us be. Here's your promise. At once we commence to outgrow fear. That is on page 68. My second favorite one is if we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things. Here's your promise. We believe we will be forgiven and we'll have learned our lesson. That is on page 70. And that one's very important to me because I came to this program believing that I was going to hell and there was nothing I could do to change it. And that one gave me hope that maybe I didn't have to go to hell. That maybe there was a God that would let me into heaven. The third step is the most important prayer to me because it gives me the most hope. And we've taken 1, 2, and 3, and these are the basic cornerstone of our program. And we've taken 1 and we've said that we've surrendered. We've humbled ourselves. And we took step 2 and we admitted that there was something out there that could help us. And now we take step 3 and we agree to be willing to let that guy help us. Those are 3 stepping stones. I spent today with a woman who has had a cat for 14 and a half years. Her husband died 3 months, not quite 4 months ago, just about 3.5 months ago. They informed her that her cat has a mass in his abdomen. On his birthday, today was her husband's birthday. And I'm praying. Because she doesn't need to lose one more thing right now. And she called me yesterday and told me that Jerry was sick. And I said, well, I can get Michelle to come help you take the cat up to the vet. And she's going, no. Michelle, I need somebody to take the cat in that'll be forceful. I said, well, I can get Terry to, you know, and she's like, no. I'm just not Terry. And finally, I'm going through all these people. And I'm like, but Betty, I'm sick. I can't be around you. You have too many things wrong with you. You're sick. She goes, but, and I said, all right, I'll be there. I said, we will wear a mask. So we masked all day. And we took him up to the vet. And we got him the best care we could get him. But they can't do enough for him there. So we're sitting in her car waiting on his records to be... They were giving him IV fluids because he was dehydrated because he'd been vomiting. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, I know I'm going to take him up to Summit. I told her, I'll call tomorrow. And something kept poking at me going, call now. Just call now. So I looked up the number. They're open till 6. It's only 4 o'clock. So I called. And of course, I'm praying this whole time, God, you got to help me do this because I just lost my cat of 20 years. They answered the phone, and I told the woman where we were at and what we were doing and what was going on, and she says, can you hold on a moment? And I said, sure. She comes back and she says, could you bring him in tomorrow at 1:30? And I'm like, I looked at Betty and she goes, yeah. I said, okay, yeah, we're bringing him in tomorrow at 1:30. And she says, well, we didn't have anything till next Thursday, but somebody just called and canceled. Now, tell me God wasn't poking me in the back. I know when God is giving me a message these days, and step 3 is a big building block to that. Granted, we have more steps that lead us to that relationship with God. I didn't get that solely from step three, but if we don't build these blocks that we're building on, and each step is a block, if we don't build them correctly, slowly. Because here's the deal, I get my girls through the steps, and then they call me up and they say, you know, I'm really jammed up about da da da, and I'll say, might be time that we go back and take a look at step such and such. Or it might be time for you to pick up your big book and read page such and such. And they're really good about saying, okay. Because most of them know that I might not always have the whole right answer, but I'm in the right direction. Because if what they ask them to do, what I ask them to do doesn't help, they know that they can come back to me and say, that didn't help. And they know that I will call around until I find somebody that can help. I will call my sponsor. I will call other women in sobriety that I trust their opinions, that I know have been through exactly what my sponsee is going through. I never mention names. I just say, one of the girls I'm working with is having this problem. What I suggested she do did not help. Can you give me any suggestions to help her? And I get some good suggestions and I call them back and I say, try such and such. And sometimes that works. And now I get to add another little page to my little book that I'm writing up in my computer on how to do the steps. I'm always learning. I love to go to retreats and workshops and I gather information while I'm at them. I love the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't tell you how many times I've gone through the steps the whole way. I can't tell you when I've gone back and specifically worked one. Every year I go back and do a 4 and 5. They're kind of short these days because I have a tendency not to slide too much. Not saying I don't at all, but I try not to slide too much because I do a 10 every day. And if I find myself sliding, then I try and catch myself before I go too far. But I'm human. I am human. But if you take step three and you work it to the best of your ability, and by the best of my ability mean if all you can do is say, I'll believe in the group of drunks that will give me good orderly direction, I will do what they did and I will work the rest of the steps. If that's the best that you can do, that's the best that is needed. We don't have to say that we're actually going to do it. This whole I gave it to God and took it back thing, so what? I do. After all these years, I do. I send it up and take it back. So don't worry about it. Just do the best you can do. God's not asking. He's not a hard taskmaster. That's also in this chapter. That he's not a hard taskmaster. He's not going to ask the impossible. And I really can't think of anything else I need to say, so I'm going to hush my mouth. Mm-hmm. And y'all can ask questions.
Thank you, Susan. So now we have time for our question and answer period. So anybody here in the room, if you have a question for Susan, please just go ahead and raise your hand. We'll bring you the microphone. And if you're on Zoom and you have a question, please just go ahead and unmute yourself and ask your question when you have a chance. So who would like to start us off? Okay.
Susan, good evening.
Hello.
Judy here, alcoholic. So you have a young girl and she comes to you and she says, I'm an atheist and I don't want to talk about God. What are you going
to
do?
I tell her it doesn't have to be God, it just has to be a power greater than herself.
Okay. I don't want to pray because, I'm not interested in religion and all that. What are you going
to tell her? I tell her it doesn't have to be a prayer, it just has to be a conversation with that power greater than herself.
Oh, I like that.
I've had these things hit me before.
What did you do?
I've had those questions hit me before.
I had a gal who said, you know, we ought to take two agnostics. We need to tear those pages out of the big book. They don't belong in there. What are you going to say to her?
We don't destroy the big book. We leave the big book exactly as it is, because there's somebody somewhere that needs to read those pages. If you want to rip them out of your copy, go right ahead, but you'll be missing something. I say it like it is.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I'm just, you know, looking for, you know. I got some wild girls, honey.
Oh, yeah. Honey, I do too. Yeah.
All right, thanks, Susan. I appreciate everything you said tonight, honey. I hope you feel better, doll.
Oh, I will.
Thanks, Susan, for this what you're doing here. Very good. Excellent. Always look forward to this one. There was someone else speaking here, I guess over the winter over Zoom, and who said this, and I just want to know how you feel about this, that, you know, turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. If we think of will as our thoughts and our lives as our actions, and we're turning our thoughts and our actions over to the care of God, I taught that to someone, a sponsee of mine, a new guy, because he was having trouble with the other way. And I said, why don't you just put, you know, thoughts and actions there rather than, you know, will and life. And he felt better about it. He could relate to it better. Is that okay?
It's fine to change it to however your sponsee can understand it. I change things all the time. I change it up to how they can understand it best. Because you want, the basic thing is get them to understand so that they can take an in the step and they can work that step and they can change their behavior. At some point in time, they're going to stop changing those words and they're going to turn it into will and life. Okay, will and lives. They're going to stop saying thoughts and actions and they're going to start saying will and lives. I don't know how exactly it works, but I've done that with girls on certain steps where it was very hard for them to understand what some of these words mean. I work with some girls who are very, very, very uneducated, who don't understand some of these words and the steps. And I've had to give them simpler words. I've had to write the steps out without some of the big words and change it for them so that they could understand it. And I would do it again tomorrow. Because you know what? Those girls managed to work the steps. They managed to get sober. They managed to go back to school and get their GEDs. And then they were able to read the 12 steps. And the big book is exactly as it was written. But I got them through the steps by changing things around a little bit. What is your motive? Okay, that's what I have to say. You always check your motive. What's your motive? Your motive is to get him over this hurdle. You got it? Okay, thank you. Thanks, Jerome.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, Brenda.
I love what you just tell it like it is, like Judy. And Judy is the same way. I love that. So, a couple things. Have you ever sponsored somebody who was an atheist and or agnostic, whatever, and came to believe in God?
Yes.
You have? Okay, I see someone teetering on that, and that's wonderful to watch. And since Judy made a comment, I'll make a comment and ask your opinion. Last Saturday, one of our members was going on vacation and accidentally did her laundry, and the cat was in the washer and went through a 25-minute cycle. And she... The cat lived. She stayed home and sent her family to Myrtle Beach or Rhode Island and saved the cat by, you know, using her nursing qualities. I know it's kind of funny, but it's not. But I was laughing about your cat story, and you know what? You never know when God's going to appear.
He's been with us all day.
Yep.
And I'm quite sure he's going to be with us tomorrow.
I thought it was kind of cute.
Thanks. I loved your story.
Thank you.
Who else has a question? Anybody on Zoom?
They're all looking mighty mute.
Yeah.
Amy's laughing.
Anybody? Oh, okay. Eric's gonna go.
Hey, Eric, alcoholic.
Hi, Eric.
Back to what Jerome was talking about with thoughts and actions. For somebody who tries to do the next right thing and does some good actions but has a tendency to have some negative and, I don't know, not the best thinking, would you say that by continuing to try to do the next right action could eventually change the thought process in one's brain? Or how would you tackle the brain, the thinking part?
Okay, let me see let me repeat what you're saying to see if I'm understanding. You're saying making the next right decision, but having negative consequences.
No, just having negative thoughts, but trying to
negative
constantly
thoughts.
Make a good, sober, good person action, but still having some negative thoughts.
Okay, that's what I thought you were saying, consequences. So that's why I wanted to ask.
Right.
Okay, because you are so attuned, my opinion, you would be so attuned, this is what I would tell any of my girls, to telling yourself you're not going to succeed, so you might as well quit now. That's what you're trying to do to yourself. You got to get to the finish line. I spend a lot of time being a cheerleader. Okay? One of the ladies that I sponsor kept telling me she wouldn't do well in school. She did lousy in high school. I barely graduated. Okay, I pushed her and pushed her and pushed her. I got her to go to school. She got a degree in phlebotomy. She says, I want to go back for medical assisting. I said, great, go. So she went to school for medical assisting. Then she did Rembrandt Tech. She just got her CNA. Okay? She did all of this with a 4-hour average. This girl who was stupid. Now, I'm going to tell you, there was about 4 of us behind her pushing and saying, you can do this, you can do this, okay? You're smarter than that. You've got this. Don't give up. So get people behind you to say, tell them what you're doing and what you're trying to accomplish and let them be your cheerleaders. Don't try and do it all on your own. It's the message I have for you, really, is, you know, don't try and do it all on your own. Get somebody behind you that can, and when things, you guys start getting negative thoughts, you call those people and you say, look, this is what I'm telling myself. Am I right or am I wrong? Get people to help you, push you out of the nest, kind of thing. And once you accomplish a few things, this person that I'm talking about used to know everybody by the color of their shoes. Today she walks with her, she walks straight and tall, her head is high. She's sponsoring 5 women, working full time, gets partial custody of her 2 daughters. Okay? So it's possible to dig yourself out of that, I'm gonna fail again, so I might as well just quit now mode. You're welcome.
Anyone else have a question? Okay.
Susan, I'm sure you've heard it said, we can't think our way into right action, but we can act our way into right thinking.
Correct.
Do you agree with those statements?
Definitely.
Okay. Yeah. It's crazy, isn't it?
It is.
But we're crazy people.
We're very simple, complicated people trying to work a simple program.
I agree. Thanks, darling.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Oh, Zoom people are quiet tonight.
Quiet. Maybe they're all, they don't know how to unmute themselves. So again, thank you very much for walking us through the way you do the third step. My question is, how do you work the 12 and 12 in when you're working people with the big book?
I have them read that, what's in the big book about the step, as well as what's in the 12 and 12. I can honestly say I really don't use it a lot. I use it more in the later steps. In the early steps, I really don't, because to be honest, a lot of them are still pretty bouncy.
Yeah.
And early. But like when you're getting into the 9, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12, I tend to use the 12 and 12 more, because there's much more information in there. Now when they're going through the steps later, I'll tell them, why don't you go refer to the 12 and 12 on that, so that they can get that extra thing. Because the first time you go through the steps, you're taking them in the most basic manner possible. Later times, you're taking them in a more spiritual manner. It's the only way I can explain it.
Okay. Gotta come up with something. I'm gonna get enough that early. Anyway, when I was originally working the third step, I really didn't. You explained like a good orderly direction, a group of drunks, and you do the first, the second, and the third step. The degree of difficulty for me, it seemed like it got harder, number one, and they got deeper, and they got deeper into myself, and I really didn't quite understand how that was. When you described how you walked people through the steps, you just got them through to get them through to make sure that they could get to those later steps, and then do you come back and revisit the third step? Like when, you know, someone's like doing, you know, like 7 or 8 and 9 or 6 and 7 when they're, you know, starting to figure out that they did have some kind of
part. Oh, we go back through the steps all the time. And the other thing I tell my girls is when they start sponsoring, when they tell their girls to read something, they better be reading it too. Okay, so they find themselves working the step along with their person they're sponsoring. And they know that I do that. When I tell them to read such and such in the big book, I read what's in the big book. Because when they pick up the phone and call me, I'd better be able to be fresh in my mind where that's at, what the question's about.
So do you have a time frame or a step frame when people you feel are able to sponsor?
Through the steps, and generally I like to see them have a good year.
Before they start sponsoring.
I want to make sure that, and I want to make sure they're stable. Like they're not still doing things. In an unsober manner.
Right.
You know. They have to have their lives kind of cleaned up.
Because I know sometimes you see people that are around and, you know, it's kind of an ego thing where I'm sponsoring, I want to sponsor. This person is really insistent that I sponsor them. And
I can say no really, really easy.
Oh, okay. So
I'm not afraid.
Okay.
I'm more scary than anything.
That's great.
I don't get it, but...
No, that's great.
Can I ask her one quick question? I don't even need that.
Yes, you do.
Oh, I do.
For the Zoom.
I'll follow directions.
Short. Good orderly direction.
Yeah, sure. I call my sponsor every single day, no matter what. Because I was told to. A couple times I didn't. She accused me of leaving town and hung up. Do you make your sponsees call you every day, or what is your theory about that?
When they're working the steps, they call me every single day.
Okay.
When they're done the steps, I tell them that I want to hear from them at least twice a week.
Okay.
They can call me anytime they want. But I tell you right now, I have women that are in their 30s, years sober, calling me every day. I have women who are at 7, 8 years sober, calling me every day. Of my 10 sponsees right now, 8 of them call me every day. I have 2 that I haven't heard from, and I'm probably just going to give them what I call the send-off call. You know, you call up and you say, I haven't heard from you in quite a while. I really hope you're working with some. If you'd like to call me back, I'd be happy to talk to you. But if you've found someone else to work with, that's great. But I'm here if you ever need me. You have my number. And then I take them off my sponsees list. And God immediately plops another one down in front of me. It happens every time. I'm kept at 10 all the time.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Hi, I'm Chrissy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Chrissy.
Thanks for having open doors. If any of your girls or yourself get mad and start cursing the God of their understanding or just infuriated with whatever's going on, referring specifically to the third step, how do you deal with that?
They're allowed to be angry. They're allowed to curse and swear. What I don't let them do is carry it on. I give them 5 minutes. And then I say, let's look for a solution. Okay? It's like self-pity. You got 5 minutes to whine.
Yeah.
Okay? And then I say, let's look for a solution. We're not here to live in the problem. We're here to live in the solution. But you're allowed to get mad. Okay, I'm not going to tell you you're not allowed to get mad. You're allowed to get mad at God. I get mad at God. Okay, it's happened. But you don't carry it on. It's like the self-pity pot. It's like the resentment pot. It's like all of that. You just don't carry it on. We start looking for root problem. What's really the root of all of this? Let's look at this. Let's bring the day back. And then we find out what's really, really the problem. And it's never what they think it is. They're telling me what the problem is. But I'm going to tell you, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. What really happened was at 6:30 this morning, the cat bit her toe or something. Okay, that's the root of the problem. And it's always the whole day built. But I don't let them carry it on. But I give them 5 minutes. And my sponsor used to give me 5 minutes. I had 5 minutes to whine.
Any other questions?
Sorry. Just one quick one. Sorry. So you want them to call you, and how many meetings do you suggest that they go to?
Minimum of 3.
Okay. Minimum of 3 meetings a week? Whether they're new versus somebody who's been around a while?
Well, when they first come in, I tell them to get to a meeting every day.
Okay.
After they've got their 6-month chip, I tell them minimum of 3 meetings a week. They usually like to keep going to meetings every day. But once they're working and they've got kids and stuff like that, I tell them no less than 3 meetings a week.
You know, if somebody's not working or whatever.
If they're not working, I better see them in a meeting at least every day. If they got no kids and they ain't working, I better see them in a meeting every day.
Okay, that's good.
Because what are you doing, sleeping? Like I said, I'm scary, Kevin.
Thank God men stick with men.
I did have a man ask me to sponsor him. It lasted 2 weeks. He fired me.
Any other questions for Susan?
Why isn't he here today?
I think that's it. Thank you, Susan.